The human aura extends out around the body from 3 to 4 feet, even from 5 to 6 feet, depending upon the evolution of the individual. This aura is made up of a variety of various vibratory rates or colors. Each area of the mind that awareness flows through is reflected by a change in the vibratory rate or the colors of the human aura. When looking at a person, if one has developed a certain psychic sight or is seeing through the eyes of the soul, he sees the aura around the individual and knows immediately exactly the area of the instinctive mind, the areas of the intellectual mind, or the subsuperconscious mind or superconscious mind itself that person's awareness is in and flowing through. For instance, if someone were flowing through the realms of depression or the state of mind that's always experiencing depression and feeling sorry for oneself, the aura would look rather gray, dim, and dismal. If one had a feeling of a beautiful love for all humanity, the aura would look light blue, befringed and tinged with yellow. However, if one was emotional about having a fine feeling for all humanity, and it was just a lot of talk, but there was more emotion there than actual being in a sub-superconscious state, the aura would be pink or reddish, telling us that there's still a lot of instinctive fire left in the person's mind, shall we say, a lot of instinctive fire left in the area where the person has been flowing his awareness recently, and should a certain circumstance come along, he could easily forget about universal love and get quite angry about the entire situation, and at which point the pink would turn into flaming red and flashes of lightning. And if he then felt remorseful about this emotional upheaval, the aura would turn to black. And you could hardly even see his face, but for the black mist he would create around himself. Someone flowing awareness through the area of the mind that feels inferior, that other people are better than they are, experiencing jealousy, oddly enough, the aura looks dark green. Someone who wants to help someone else, heal them, the aura looks a very pale, pale green. Someone who is studying and has a desire to know and increases intellect, the aura is a brilliant yellow. Several colors can be in the aura at the same time, which represents suppressed desire. Someone could be seething in anger and have it suppressed, or in the back of his mind, at the same time, be studying intellectually, and his head would be surrounded in yellow. The lower part of his body would be streaked with red, and even a touch of green, showing that his anger was caused by jealousy. Anyone coming and asking, "What is wrong with me? Why do I feel this way?" It's not only easy to diagnose by simply looking at the vibratory rate of the aura and the colors, it's easy to see what area of the mind awareness is flowing through. For the mind is complete and finished. It only seems like it is being created when we are in the conscious mind itself. And each area of the vast universe of the mind has its own color and its own sound. We only interpret it through our nerve system and register these colors and sounds as feeling. When we separate awareness from that which it is aware of, we can also separate feeling from that which we feel and see color and sound, or see the vibratory rates of the complete gamut of emotion. This is what is commonly known as the human aura. When someone is flowing through the sub-superconscious area of the mind, and as he is programming his subconscious anew, the aura changes rapidly. You know that he's making progress. Each week, he looks differently. You sort of give him an aura inspection, so to speak. His aura improves. He's working with himself. He's working within himself. Someone sitting in shumnam, someone sitting in meditation, working within himself in the course of a half an hour, will change the colors of his aura from 3 to 4 to 5 times, moving his awareness from the instinctive intellectual mind into the brilliancy of the sub-superconscious area of the mind, and his aura will begin to look light blue, light yellow, with white moving into it. When he moves awareness into superconsciousness itself, rays of light from the central source of energy begin to emerge right from the core of his spine, and these rays go right out through the aura and penetrate the atmosphere of the room. You feel that his presence is a very blessing to the room itself. Very early in life, I learned about the human aura, but only about 15 years later did I learn how to read the aura of the subconscious mind itself. The subconscious mind has an aura, which is different than the everyday aura that we make, or which appears around the physical body as a result of our flowing awareness through one area of the mind or another. All of our reactionary conditions of the past that are currently reacting in our subconscious mind now, we carry around with us in our body, and it can be seen if we know how to see it. And oddly enough, it looks like modern art. I was amazed the first time I looked at the subconscious aura of some of my students. It's in the chest area. It's in the torso area of the body. And looking deep within the torso area of the body, you see various colors. They don't move, and they're just situated there, and it looks like a modern art painting. I think possibly the artists who paint in that way are actually painting their subconscious mind readings of themselves, their family, and their friends. Because that's exactly what it looks like. Over in the left-hand side of the chest, you might see a big blob of green. Down in the lower abdomen, a big blob of red. Up near the throat, some yellow, some orange or purple across the heart area. This doesn't move, it just sits there. But as soon as someone begins to meditate, it begins to move around. As soon as they get enough control of the flow of awareness, they break up the ordinary habit patterns of their daily life and they begin reprogramming the subconscious mind. Their aura begins to change a little bit, and these patterns begin to move around. When a predominant subconscious reactionary pattern comes before our vision after meditation as if it happened almost yesterday, we begin to react to it all over again, you will find one of these colors moving up to the throat area, and possibly that's why when a subconscious reaction pattern happens, we give a little swallow, we give a little gulp. Gulp. And we're living something all over again and we have to swallow. Well, that moves right up to the throat area. At that point, if you ask the question, what's on your mind? All this garbage would come out. They'd just tell you all about it. Well, I recommend that they write it down on a piece of paper and burn it up. Then that color leaves and another color merges out, which is underneath it. A green one might leave and a brown one might come up. And all of these subconscious repressed areas will eventually be dissipated, or awareness in a divided condition, awareness which is divided in many different ways, will pull in its tentacles from those areas of the mind until it can move freely through all areas of the mind in a very detached way. Each time one of these deep-rooted subconscious reactionary conditions would leave, the aura would become more, shall we say, more bright, less rigid, more fluid. The individual would become more wholesome. And after an entire subconscious cleansing, due to maybe a year of someone working with himself and developing and reprogramming his subconscious mind positively, the chest would turn into just a pure sheet of yellow. Very beautiful. And then you begin to see rays of light and white light coming out from it. And this would continue until they stopped working with themselves and started moving into a subconscious area, or ran against a condition in life which they couldn't handle within themselves and just plain resented coming to them. And then they'd start to cloud up in the chest area again, and you could see it. It looks exactly like a modern art painting, just exactly like modern art painting, putting colors on a big white screen in various and varied ways. The mind is like a vast universe. Man's individual awareness travels through the mind from one planet to another, one area to another, or if we compare the mind to the world, man's individual awareness travels through the mind from hate to love to joy to sorrow to all the various ideas and concepts within the mind as he would travel from country to city to city. Therefore, the human aura is very consistent. The big question always arises is, how do we know whether we're seeing an aura or not, or if it's just our imagination? Actually, there is no such thing as imagination according to the general use of the word. When we go within ourselves, we find that each thing that is so-called imagination, or in the world of image, actually exists within the refined substance of the mind itself, and we just become aware of it where it is imprinted in the vast internal substance of the mind. Only when we become aware of something that we imagine for a long enough period do we bring it out of the subtle areas of the mind and impress it upon the memory patterns of the astral and physical brain? Then we don't say it's imagination, we begin to call it real at that point. Finally, we can bring it into physical manifestation, and then we really begin to call it real. And I suppose that this is the way man's individual awareness has become externalized, so that he looks at the external world as real and the internal refined areas of mind consciousness as being unreal or elusive to him. Wasn't always like that, because with the absence of things which externalize man's individual awareness, man is naturally within himself. When awareness is within the very depths of the mind, so that color and light and sound are one and the same to him, he then looks at his fellow man from the inside out. He would first see the spine of someone he was looking at and the lights within the spine. Then he would see the aura of the individual. And then last, he would see the physical body. When awareness is externalized to the point where we see physical things as reality, then we see the physical body first. Then we have to strain to see the aura and look into the internal layers of consciousness of the external man or our friends around us. Go within yourself and all things will then be unfolded to you on the inner planes of consciousness, as well as on the external planes of consciousness. You will begin to see through them. Seeing an aura is like seeing through someone. The physical body begins to fade just a little bit, and we see where their awareness is flowing in the wonderful world of the mind. The colors around a person, first you would see within your own mind. You wouldn't see them around their physical body. Later, you would become adjusted to this new form of sight and see the colors around the individual's physical body. Where do these colors come from? All things in the mind are sound as well as color. Look around you. Each vibratory rate of a physical object has a sound as well as a color. Everything is sound, everything is color, and everything is shape. Therefore, in the refined areas of the mind, all things are color and all things are sound. And through the sixth sense of the all-seeing eye, which incidentally is always awake, it doesn't have to be awakened within anyone. You have to learn how to use it. You have to learn how to use your all-seeing eye. In the very same way, an artist must learn how to use his physical eyes to distinguish between one shade of a color and another, to distinguish between the dimensions in a painting. He must learn how to use his physical eyes. The mystic must learn how to use his already developed sixth sense, or his third eye. You use it all the time anyway, constantly, day in, day out. Someone who walks into your home, you look at them, you say, "You're not feeling very well today. You look disturbed." How do you know? Inside of yourself, you are seeing their aura. If they come in looking bright and shiny, it's not just because they maybe have washed their face. Inside of you, you are seeing their aura. Of course, the quest is not to see thought forms and to analyze auras. The quest is to flow awareness through even the core of energy itself into the vastness of the self, where awareness, completely aware of itself, dissolves in its own essence into timelessness, causelessness, spacelessness, into the self beyond that still, still area of the mind. There are so many areas to cover and to understand on the path that to study out the intricacies of the human aura is not advisable. It's one of the delightful side paths on the path of enlightenment, something that could involve your whole life. It's not recommended to study reading auras because we use up good, valuable time, and that time should be put in working with ourselves, not snooping around in where other people are in consciousness. However, in doing what I'm doing and what our ministers and catalysts and priests are doing, it's one of the tools of the trade. Mystics do not always have an easy time in living in the world and functioning in the world. Sometimes it's extremely difficult because, though apparently become sensitive, you become stronger in all of your various senses, and you don't become sensitive in the way of being weak, but you become very different than so-called other people are. About 6 or 7 years, I went through a very difficult time because I was working very intently with the unfoldment of a large number of students. And every time I picked up something that was heavier than a piece of paper, my arms and hands would turn to light. And instead of seeing the physical body, I'd see the inner body. And then that light would, if I carried something like a book or a chair, I'd pick it up and my hands would turn to light, my arms would turn to light. Then the light would creep up my arms, down my legs, and everything would start to fade away. Invariably. About 6 years of my life, even a piece of paper like this was heavy. And anything heavier than that, even it was difficult to wear a wristwatch, because then that arm would turn to light. And I'd be more conscious of this beautiful light arm that looked like a crystal plastic, beautiful soul body, you know, than I would be of other things I was doing it. Just loved to watch it and all the scintillating energy within it. It was just lovely. Even in driving a car was the greatest fun during that time, because if I pressed my hands very hard on the steering wheel, then my whole body would start turning to light, and I would start to see the most dense areas of the car in front of me, which was just the chassis part. All the top part and the people would fade away, and I'd just see the dense part of it, all the heaviest types of metal I would see, and all the other stuff would fade away, and it looked so funny. Driving down the street, and it really did. So a mystic can really live in just a wonderful world. Later on, I finally got out of that state so that it wouldn't be a disturbing state, and now I'm not as much in it. I can be in it if I want to, but it's voluntary. It's not an involuntary state to be in. I remember once, while in that state, I had to put the garbage can out on the sidewalk, and there was no one to carry it. And I had a terrible time. I'd just get it so far, and I'd turn all to light, and I'd have to put it down again. And finally, I got it out, and then I had to go to bed. If the phone rang, it sounded so loud. And it was just a terrific thing to pull the physical elements together again. So that is why a good, healthy physical body is one of the prerequisites. Because when you start to awaken, or after you awaken, you go through entirely new sets of experiences. I could reel off one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other to you, and keep you entertained for hours and hours and hours of these inner experiences that I have gone through day after day after day, which is so natural to me. I think anymore I don't even know that they're experiences, because they're just myself. And if you question me about them, and I tell you how I react and look at things, then we would know that they were experiences that are different than the ordinary experience. I remember the first time that I learned about LSD. I went to the Menlo Park Clinic to find out about it, because it was becoming popular in the newspaper and at the University of California, and I started reading a few articles about it. And I talked to the psychiatrists there, and they started explaining these different experiences. And I said, these are experiences I've had every day of my life for the last 20 years. These different experiences. They said, well, Maya, you are fortunate, aren't you? The mystic has to watch himself also, that he doesn't become too overly compassionate for his fellow man. Too open. He must protect his inner life by living 2/3 within himself and only 1/3 in the external, and he has to be wise enough to know that each one has to walk either over or around all of the boulders on their path. In other words, if you are around people who have auras which are not good, who have deep-rooted subconscious areas that represent a lot of black, gray, red, green blobs hidden in their psychic nerve currents of their chest, and you are not quite out of that area yourself, the vibratory rate of those people will draw you back into those areas of the mind. In the very same way that those colors, which are represented psychically by sounds, if they were played on the radio, it would represent music and you'd start to feel real good and you start to dance. It would penetrate your nerve system and move you into that area quite rapidly. Then you will find it very difficult to meditate. That is why those who live the contemplative life like to be among themselves. They like to be with people of the same lifestyle. It's necessary. It's extremely necessary to surround yourself with a good environment to make progress on the path past a certain point. Sure, you can meditate a little bit to move awareness into a peaceful area of the mind, or to get a little burst of inner light, or to practice breathing and have a healthier body and a more sound nerve system. But if you really want to go deep in towards your goal, you have to move awareness, physical body, emotional body, mental body, in with a group of people that are thinking along the same lines, living the same lifestyle. The group helps the individual, and the individual helps the group. People who are still going through the instinctive and intellectual areas of the mind, their vibrations will be extremely hard on you. You will become too sensitive. And if you're of a compassionate nature, you'll become like a sponge, in a sense. And instead of working with them to lift them up, you will flow with them and lay down in the gutter, so to speak, and roll around with them and have a fine old time and then suffer because of it. You have to move through the world unnoticed. You cannot run around and tell everybody that you meet, I'm a yoga student. I meditate. I go within myself. Hey, have a look at my aura. Because you will be criticized, you'll be laughed at, you'll be jeered at, you'll be shunned. Move through the world unnoticed. Just be an ordinary person. The more ordinary you are, the better the mystical life you will have. Move through the world unnoticed. Live 2/3 within yourself, 1/3 on the outside. The biggest barrier and the biggest hindrance on the path is a spiritual blabbermouth who takes it in one ear and spurts it out his mouth to the first person that'll listen. Take in through your ears, take in through your eyes, take in through your senses, and let very few of your discoveries out. If you have spiritual experience, tell no one about it. Only your guru. Keep it within yourself. For each of these beautiful experiences we have on the path are like little sprouts that come up as a result of seeds that have been planted. And if we grab the little sprout and pull it out by the roots and say, hey, everybody, look what I grew. We dissipate the energy. We try to plant it again, and we do, and it won't grow. Falls over dead. Because we've uprooted it. The same with our inner experiences. Don't uproot them. If you have a flash of light, if you have a beautiful superconscious experience, and I'll tell you about a few of them you will be having or may have had in a few minutes, keep it to yourself. Don't tell anybody. Don't be an outstanding superego simply because you have had an experience. You're simply then flow awareness into the instinctive area of the mind and the intellectual area of the mind and out of the area of the mind which produced the so-called experience. Keep it in. 2/3 within, 1/3 without. Move through the world unnoticed. After the subconscious mind has been very, very carefully reprogrammed into a contemplative lifestyle, there's very little difference between the subconscious mind and the superconscious. Therefore, basically, we have moved our awareness into an entirely new mind structure, or at least it seems new to us, which is called the sub-superconscious mind. Or the superconscious mind has a subconscious to it, which is connected with physical body and physical body functions, as well as everyday life. The sub-superconscious mind is basically man functioning at a higher vibratory rate than he does when he is living in the instinctive, intellectual area of the mind. What is the sub-superconscious mind? It's the new superconscious of the new age person, well-programmed in a contemplative life. A man who can work with himself and move awareness freely through any area of the mind that he wants to, consciously, without being hindered by habit patterns and reactionary conditions of the past, which was previously in the subconscious mind, programmed for him by parents and friends and family and school teacher and the public in general as he came along through life from birth in this life. My master, Yogaswami, always knew when people were going to come to see him, and he would mention to those around him, so-and-so is going to come today, and they'll be here in about an hour. How did he know that? Through the perceptive faculties of his sub-superconscious mind, which he studied out and worked with. It's wonderful to be in the sub-superconscious area of the mind and live there 24 hours a day. Simply because we use the word super does not put that area of the mind out of the reach of the so-called ordinary man. Everyone's ordinary, or everyone is super. Simply a name for an area of the mind that you have undoubtedly been living in more than you know. When your timing is perfect and everything works correctly around you, things happen as you expect them to happen, or even better, you're in the sub-superconscious area of the mind. You're certainly not in the subconscious area, nor are you in the external conscious mind. You're sub-superconscious. You're living within the inner realms and the external realms at the same time. When you feel stationary and stable, and if the whole world were to stop, you would be the one that it would stop around because you're the center. And yet you're able to talk with people and converse with people. That is the sub-superconscious area of the mind. Sub-superconsciousness is really awareness traveling, propelled by energy and willpower. A man walking down the street, conscious of his energy, he is only doing one thing. He's walking down the street, he's moving the physical body, pure energy, moving that physical body and walking. And yet, all the different things on the street are passing by him, or he is passing by them. He sees store windows, automobiles, people, things in those store windows. Many, many things are happening around him as he's walking down the street in this city. Man in the sub-superconscious area of the mind, even in meditation, is sitting as a being of pure energy, and many thoughts are going past his vision. He is flowing through the world of thought in a sub-superconscious state. It is a stationary state within the realms of the thinking mind. When we're out of the thinking mind, we're in the conceptual areas and we're in the superconscious area of the mind. So finally, intuition, superconsciousness, works through the conscious mind as well as the subconscious mind. So therefore, basically, we have no need for those particular categories unless we slip out of superconsciousness and start to rebuild a subconscious, which is separate, in a sense, from superconsciousness by spending too much time with awareness flowing through the conscious area of the mind or the world of the senses. In the subconscious mind,
divided into two sections. One handles the involuntary processes of the body, and the other handles the involuntary processes of the emotions. The instinctive habit patterns are action and reaction process, and all the things we generally experience in everyday living. We all have, at one time or another, most people on the path have experimented with proper nutrition. And we've watched our diet very closely. We have seen that it had immediate effects upon the physical body. The body itself began to change. We started to feel better, to look differently, to become more vibrant physically, to become thinner. As the food intake had its chemical reactions upon the cells of the physical body. Now this generally, unless we have a deep understanding or have made nutrition a part of a lifestyle, we generally go back to our old patterns of eating. And we find that the body quickly changes back to the way it used to behave, look, and feel through an improper intake of food and chemical balance. This is what can happen in the part of the subconscious mind which handles the involuntary processes of the body. The same thing can happen in the other part of the subconscious mind, which handles the processes of the emotional body. We can work with ourselves very diligently and put in a fine program in the subconscious mind. But if we don't use that program, if we don't keep it up, if we don't keep working with ourselves, in a sense, if we don't stay on the path, if we sit down on the path where we are, stop striving, and allow our previous or old habit patterns, action and reaction processes to mold the subconscious again from the instinctive areas of the mind, the subconscious itself will rebuild itself or reprogram itself all by itself into the same condition it was when you started working with it, to put in that brand new sparkling program of your contemplative life. Meditate on that. Be careful with the subconscious mind. Stay in a good environment. Associate with those that are on the path, those that are working with themselves, those that are inwardly striving, and they'll help you work with yourself and help you inwardly strive by example. And when old habit patterns start to reprogram the subconscious mind, almost without you knowing it, the vibration of those around you will check those qualities from gaining too much power. We're influenced by our environment. We're influenced by the people that we are around. Be around the people that can influence you the best until you're reprogrammed strong enough and powerfully enough to influence those around you. The sub-superconscious mind is a quiet subconscious. That's actually what it is. The subconscious that has been made to be peaceful by putting into it a contemplative lifestyle. It's a receptacle for the superconscious areas of mind to permeate the physical body or the psyche, the body of the soul, to look right out through the eyes of the physical body and radiate out through the cells of the physical body
and the superconscious rays to radiate out through the aura of the physical body through this reprogrammed subconscious. Would you like to try to find your sub-superconscious state of mind? Look at the room around you. You're in the conscious mind. Feel your personal feelings and be aware of what you're thinking about right now. You're in the subconscious mind. Feel now your spiritual identity. Feel the power in your spine. Sit up nice and straight. Feel powerful on the inside. Feel that just a little bit more than you see the room around you or are conscious of your personal thoughts and feelings. Now you are in a sub-superconscious state because you are conscious of your superconsciousness, the power and energy and life and spiritual forces resident right within the body itself. You are conscious of your thinking faculty as well as my voice and the room around you. It's just that easy to be in a sub-superconscious state, an expanded state of awareness. When the spiritual body of the psyche merges with the physical body, then you begin to go through the harassing experiences with your eyes set upon your ultimate goal. You begin to live your life in service to mankind, in reprogramming your subconscious, in facing all of the things that you didn't face fully through your many, many lives, in working with your emotions, in working with your intellect. And finally, you come to the crucifixion of the ego, when your last experiences have finally begun to fade and you no longer see yourself as a Mr. Somebody who came from some community somewhere, who is a certain nationality, and who incidentally distinguishes himself from all other people because he is on the path to enlightenment and he knows a lot of people that aren't. And this great spiritual pride finally gets crucified, gets put on the cross of man's own spiritual discernment. And that's a tremendous experience, that death of the ego. You go through the dark night of the soul when you feel even God has deserted you, your family, your friends, everything. You don't see light anymore. You see just blackness all through you. All of the accumulated experiences of all the many, many lives come in on you. And you don't know where you are in awareness. You can't figure it all out. Then finally, I am that I am. You burst into the self. As we study Hinduism, the illumination of man is told. All the various stories. Stories are fun. They impress the subconscious, and everyone likes a story. Intuition flows through a purified subconscious. The word pure and impure, they should be thrown out of our mystical vocabulary, because if the subconscious mind is programmed in a so-called impure way, there's nothing wrong with the subconscious. It simply has to be programmed differently. Who does that? Your infinite intelligence. Your spiritual body. One day you'll see that body, and you'll see it inside the physical body. It looks like clean, clear plastic. Around it is a blue light. And it's sort of whitish, yellowish, the outline of it. Inside of it is blue, yellowish light. And there are thousands and billions of little nerve currents and life and scintillating energy all through it. It stands on a lotus flower.
You look down through your feet, you see a lotus flower standing there, just as big and beautiful as can be. It has a head, it has eyes, and it has infinite intelligence. It's tuned in to the source of all energy itself. This body was given birth to when you came out of the instinctive world. The instinctive man does not have a body like this. He is still in a lower form of evolution, and he is growing his emotional body. Even his emotional reactions are spasmodic. When the emotions begin to react in a systematic way, and hate and fear and jealousy and love and passion and emotion, all of those emotions begin to function properly, and awareness flows out into the conscious mind, the physical body begins to take on a mature, intelligent look. You look at the person, you say, by looking at his body, I see that he's an intelligent man. That means all of his instinctive and intellectual faculties are working. He hasn't yet turned inward. You can tell that by looking at his eyes. Maybe in a life or two, he will turn inward as soon as he has satisfied some of his desires he set into motion. When he begins to turn inward, he begins to grow a new body, which is this spiritual body. And it starts to grow within the emotional body. He gives birth to it, and he has his first light experience. And it grows from a child, and all of his good deeds feed that body, and all of his selflessness and selfless actions toward others feed that body. And all of his working with himself, conquering instinctive emotions within himself, is food for that body. All of his selfishness and greed and giving power into the instinctive elements starve that body. And so it goes along. You've heard about the suffering of the soul. And it goes along and it cries out and it wants more attention. And that's man's fight within itself. The Bhagavad Gita explains that beautifully. Krishna, the spiritual body, and Arjuna, the instinctive intellectual body, saying, why, Krishna? Why? Krishna patiently explaining why. Man's awakening on the path to enlightenment. Until finally, this grows up into the child and becomes the sub-superconscious mind. Grows up into the man and becomes a superconscious mind and takes on more spiritual force from the infinite. Finally, takes over the astral body or the emotional body, which was developed just after he came out of the animal kingdom. And that's the whole story of the inner awakening that is occurring within each one of you. It has been occurring for quite some time. The mere fact it makes sense to you when I tell you about it, the mere fact that I can talk to you about it, is that you're right in that area of superconsciousness moving out into the conscious plane.